No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
This episode is brought to you by PayPal. PayPal helps you make the most of your money. You can earn 20% cash back when you pay in full with PayPal from now through December 8th. No fees, no interest. Act now to get this limited time offer.
Save the offer in the app to get 20% cash back when you pay in full from now through December 8th. PayPal. Expires 12/8. See paypal.com/promo terms. Subject to approval. Learn more at paypal.com/pay-in-4. PayPal Inc. NMLS 910457.
W.
T. L.
It's a big, hairy American winning machine. You ain't first. You're last.
W.
T. L.
All right, nice, huh? Got a talk show here. Talk show with my mic. I got everything.
W.
T. L.
What he does is work out at performance. 10 and 2, 85% weekend. You're a mute!
W.
T. L.
Brings me to my next point. Don't smoke crack.
And welcome, everybody, back to WTL. I'm your host, Andy Klassen, joined by...
Jabron. What's up, guys? We're back.
Here we go, the Parlay Pounder.
Yes, sir.
I mean, there are so many things going on right now.
Yeah.
We got a loaded episode here.
This one's awesome.
I mean, we got USFL. That's too much fun.
Yeah, it is.
Too much fun.
Football, baby.
Hey, first three-point conversion in football history.
Yeah.
History being made.
It happened.
NBA playoffs, of course.
Wow.
UFC...
Yeah.
Huge
UFC
card.
274.
Huge card.
I'm grinding on this one. This is my card. I'm calling all these right.
We're gonna. I love it. Love it. So you know we're gonna get after it there.
Yeah.
But we also kind of a fun episode here. We get to talk to one of the predominant sports figures around Nebraska, anyhow,
yeah.
Omaha metro area, Jimmy Allen.
Wow.
Host of the After Hours show on 1620 The Zone.
Yes, sir.
He's going to give some perspective on the NFL draft. Crazy player prop bets.
It's nuts.
Teddy Covers of Wager Talk Daily.
Yep.
I mean, he said Friday morning on his show, he's like, man, the books got beat up.
They
because
did.
The only people really betting on that are the sharps, are smart money.
They know it.
Yeah, and they're not screwing around.
No, they're not. It's
almost like a game where everyone's in on this joke.
Right.
You know, and the only people losing are the books because you have the sharps who got in early.
Yep.
They know X amount of quarterbacks are going to be taking the first, second round.
Yep.
So that's where they're going to lay their money down. And then all the fans, I'm a Michigan guy.
Yeah.
So you're going to bet heavy on Michigan guys getting taken.
Yep.
Like, everybody's in on this joke. And a lot of times the books mop it up on that. But that wasn't the case this year.
No, they really turned the tide on them this year. Yeah, it just seemed like... A lot of people called stuff right, and it usually doesn't happen like that, but it did this year. So
it was, and it was a different draft. Not as many quarterbacks taken early.
Not a lot of predominant players, you know. Not a lot of hype behind a lot of these players, but
right.
I really think that helped out those sharps with knowing where these guys were going. Because when you get a whole bunch of guys that you know are predominant coming from Ohio State and all this kind of stuff,
right.
You know, Florida and all this kind of stuff, you can place those guys with teams down the list with not a lot of those guys going, you don't know who's I don't know how those sharps did it, but they did a great job.
Right. Well, I mean, they did their homework like always.
Exactly.
And they measured up like, oh wow, look at this number of teams that need defensive linemen and how many defensive linemen are available.
Yep.
You know, so that was just another place where you do your homework and you get paid off, and that's what That's how what the Sharps make that, heck their yeah. money. But okay, with this first segment, we're not talking USFL. We're not talking UFC.
Not yet.
We're not talking with Jimmy Allen yet. We are getting into NBA basketball. Already a couple, I don't know if you want to call them upsets, but the road teams won.
Yeah, it's and that's pretty wild when a road team wins game one, because that kind of puts the...
steals home court.
Yeah, and puts that favorite in, you know, kind of a bind, gets them sweating a little bit.
Yeah, it does.
The first game we kind of want to talk about is coming up Saturday night, or Saturday, at 2:30 on ABC, Boston versus Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, Milwaukee took game one at Boston.
Yep. Statement.
Kind of a lopsided one, too. Boston was favored by 4. They lost 101-89 in Boston.
Yeah.
The Greek Freak, man.
Yeah.
Triple-double.
Yeah. Triple-double.
Boston doesn't really have a horse like that.
There's a couple of highlights there where Tatum tried to post him up and it's like, oh, no, son.
No. This is the Greek Freak.
Yeah. I'm going to put you on my hip, put you to the floor, yep. Dunk the ball.
Yep. So what I'm expecting this line kind of do, and obviously we have a game in between this, the second game of Boston, but... on Saturday, I'm really expecting this line to about reverse and go about 4 to 5 points towards Milwaukee, because will be the home team. Yep.
And they already stole
Saturday.
One. They
and they've already
one.
Sold one.
Yep.
So this could get anywhere to 6 or 7, but I think it's, you know, with the
probably
playoffs,
five.
Where the playoffs are and how closely matched these teams are,
yeah.
I think it's going to be 4 or 5. I'm going to tell you right now, I like Giannis and Co. to, you know, defend home court and cover. If it's four.
You don't like more than that.
No. I might go 5, but I'm not pushing that. I'm not pushing 5. And while I look, I might look at this under, because the Bucks play really, really good defense. I mean, not just at home, but obviously abroad. They just, you know, one of the best teams in the world. They just held them to 89 points. So the over-under in game one was at 215. And if it gets anywhere near that for this game 3, I'm going to take the under.
The under. Hammer it.
Anything over 215, I'm going to hammer. Yeah. Anything 212 or lower, I'm probably going to stay away from.
I'll give you a little credit on that. And we've kind of done this as a show. We've hit that over under pretty good.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, we'll give it up every now and then, and that's just how it goes with sports betting.
Yeah.
You know, picking winners and losers. But as far as the over-under goes, we're pretty solid, and I really like where you're going with that, because Milwaukee, that's their DNA.
Right.
And they've won a title to back that up.
No doubt about it.
And that's one of the things where you can tell Giannis is one of those international players where he's just a basketball purist, and he does not give up on defense.
No, he does not.
And that steals points from the other side.
Exactly.
There's no easy lay-ins, no easy dunks. Everything's defended, especially in the paint.
Exactly.
Tatum doesn't get his highlight reel, you know, 3 dunks a game.
Exactly.
That does not happen.
Yeah, or Jaylen Brown or anything like that.
No.
And on the opposite side of the ball, Boston just has the defensive player of the year in Marcus Smart. So that's all they have.
Yep. If they're going to win, it has to be on defensive.
Exactly. Yep. And like you said, that even though that Tatum and Jaylen Brown and all those guys aren't getting, you know, those highlight things, they still don't give up on defense either.
Right.
They're still a young team with all their superstars going, you know, kind of.
Yeah, they're hungry.
They're hungry.
They got to get it done on
both
ends.
They got to get it done. No, if this is 215 or higher, guys, you guys need to smack that, because that under will hit for sure if it's 215 or above.
I like it. Okay, so let's hit that evening game then. Move on to 7:30 ABC nightcap, Memphis versus Golden State. And wouldn't you know it, Golden State somehow stole a game on the road. How does that happen?
Well, for one thing, I think they're the just straight up better team. I think if our listeners have been listening for the last couple, 3-4 weeks, I think I called that Milwaukee and Golden State will be meeting in the finals.
In the finals, yep.
And I
Western
think that
finals.
Is going to happen. That's still my
Looks
pick.
Looks like it.
These two organizations are still my picks to do that. The whole thing with Golden State is Draymond got thrown out of this game.
Right. Yeah. Flagrant two.
So I think
I just slapped a guy. What's up? I don't even get it.
I didn't even mean
to hit him in the face. I just hit him in the face.
And I agree. I mean, I don't like Draymond. I hate him. Actually, I'm a big LeBron guy, so I hate him. I hope he's thrown out of every game, but I'm just saying he's not going to be. And I really think that Golden State probably would have opened this up to a lot bigger lead than what they did.
Right.
They only won by one. So Memphis actually covered in this game because Golden State was favored by two on the road.
Right.
But it's just they're a better team. Everybody can tell they're a better team. They have the championship DNA. Memphis is just that grinder, that gritty team, that young team that has the talent to do it.
That's
just can they put it together?
To your point, that is exactly why the books had Golden State as a two-point favorite on the road. And guess what? They were only a point off.
Yeah.
And you could even, you know, if you want to dive into that, they weren't even off. They're trying to generate a number to get people to bet on.
Yes.
Okay. And guess what? They split it right down the middle.
Right down
half
the middle.
The money was, you know, Memphis covering. The other half was on Golden State covering. And so they nailed it. So, and not only that, they were within a point. So everything that could have went right for the books in that instance was spot on.
For sure. I just want to kind of talk about the over-under on this. That was set at 227.5, and it went over that. It went to 132. So I think in this third game, I bet they're pushing that over-under up to the 230s.
Right.
You know, 232, something like that, 232.5.
Yeah.
I still like Golden State to cover if it's a four-point line. But again, guys, look at these unders. If it gets up to 232, 235, something like that, something crazy like that, that under will hit. That under will hit. Golden State is a different team at home. They do not allow people to get in their rhythms and shoot, especially if Draymond is on the floor.
Draymond going to mind his P's and Q's? Because he's already come out and said, like, man, I didn't see that. You know, he's already calling out the officials
he's
in the league.
He's already being a donkey about it,
donkey is a very politically correct way to put that. That was a good one there. So let's say he doesn't, okay? So then now that defense is gone.
Yeah.
You know, Klay Thompson is a good defender. Great defender.
One of the best.
He's not what he was.
He's not what he was, and these guards are lethal and athletic for Memphis. The whole thing is, I know that people are going to be pretty skittish about this, but I'm just saying 230 is a lot of points. 230 is a lot of points, but they've already done it, like you're saying, but I feel like they had to do that. Golden State had to get into the scoring mode instead of lockdown mode.
But it's also where they're comfortable, I feel. I feel like they like that.
Yeah.
They'll trade buckets with you all day, every day. If that's what you want to do, they will do it. And if Draymond is on a kind of a leash, and I think Steve Kerr will try and protect him as much as he can.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as he sees him getting a little hot, he's going, all right, let's get him out of there.
Leash.
We're just giving you a break. We're just giving you a breather, brah. Don't worry about it,
brah. The other reason I really think this is going to hit the under if it's 230 or, you know, 232, Andy, is that they get in such good rhythms at Golden State that it's a potential blowout anytime that those guys step on the floor.
Yes, it is.
And with a young team like Memphis and a couple of other these teams that haven't really been there before in the playoffs against Golden State, these guys could open it up to 15 to 20 points and the other team give up. That doesn't happen.
So then go to cruise control, you're saying?
Yep, and then they're not getting a lot of points.
Yeah, nothing screws the line more than blowouts. I will admit that.
Exactly, and Golden State is one of those teams that do it more than anybody.
They do.
This game could literally end up 100 to 73, like that.
They do. They rip your heart out. Like, they'll get up 15 to 3, and, you know, Klay will hit a time. We'll hit a timely three.
Exactly.
Steph will hit a three and do a shimmy and kind of wink at you, and then you're done.
And then
you're done. You know.
And they play so well on defense, as you know, on the opposite side, it's so hard to get buckets on them, especially in the paint where you know people are getting those easy one and twos.
Right. Draymond's not going to allow that if he's available.
If he's available.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break here, right? We're going to take a little break here. Once again, we've got Nebraska Brewing Company in the house. Going to talk about those guys a little bit. Actually recorded a little segment at the Tap Room with special guest Jimmy Allen. We're going to take a quick break, talk about Jimmy, introduce him, and get you into that. That's all coming on the way here on WTL. And welcome back, everybody, to WTL. I'm your host, Andy Klassen, joined by
Gibran,
the Parlay Pounder. All right, now we talked about it. We foreshadowed a little bit here. Got a very cool guest in Jimmy Allen.
For sure.
Host of the After Hours on 1620. We dive into NFL draft. So much crazy betting.
Yeah.
Player prop betting.
No, I couldn't get
what's going on that?
That is wild. On it. Nope.
That is wild. And we mentioned it, how just the books took a beating.
Yeah.
Not very many happy cappers.
Yeah.
Not campers, cappers.
Cappers.
Heading into Friday and Saturday just because they're just losing. They were losing it so bad.
Yeah, the whole thing, Jimmy knew his stuff on it, though.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun to hear that, so.
Yeah, and of course, we're Husker guys, Midwest guys, so we dove into a little bit of Husker talk there, Bo Planey. So fascinating, really good interview here. Hope you guys enjoy, and we'll catch you back on the other side. And welcome, everybody, back to WTL, Where's the Line? I'm your host, Andy Klassen. Now, we got a special guest here, someone a lot of folks, especially around the Omaha metro area, are very aware of. That's Jimmy Allen, host of After Hours on 1620 The Zone. Jimmy, how you doing?
Andy, great, man. Thank you very much for having me. I hope enough people know about me. I think we're doing things right if people know who I am. Scary moment the other day. My 14-year-old niece told me she Googled me, and I was a little worried about what she may have found. But
oh, wow.
Apparently, it was a lot of pictures of me talking on the radio. All the bad stuff is apparently hidden, so shout out to Google for that.
There we go. There we go, and censorship goes right.
Yeah, there's a couple skeletons maybe we don't want dug up, but nothing too bad.
Nah, beyond skeletons or whatever. You've been in the game for quite a while now, especially covering the Huskers.
Yeah, I've done a lot of stuff, man. The dream was to work for the World Herald coming out of high school, and I was able to do that. I was a copy editor. I was trying to remember what exactly I started off doing because I wore so many hats down there. But the end goal was to be Tom Chattel, and I'm lucky enough to call Tom a friend these days, and I've been able to interview him a couple times working for Gary. But it took me 4 years of school and a couple years at the paper to realize I actually hated writing.
Okay.
And I said this one day on air, and people probably say it's easy for me to say now, but the end goal was absolutely to get to 1620 The Zone. Mm-hmm. I grew up a huge fan of Michael Severe and Kevin Kugler, and the original Unsportsmanlike Conduct. And I remember I used to coach at the for the Omaha Westside Junior Warriors, mm-hmm. and every day driving to practice, I would listen to those guys, and I always said I'm eventually going to be there. And I'm also a huge fan of Freddie Coleman, mm-hmm. Who I'm also lucky enough to call a friend from ESPN,
awesome.
And he's done the overnight show for so long on their radio broadcasts, and
right.
Got a little combination of both. I'm right on after Unsportsmanlike Conduct, and I'm a sort of an overnight show. So I've been lucky enough to be somewhat close to what I wanted to do.
Well, and you bring up Michael Severe and Kevin Kugler. I mean, you're kind of talking about two of the best right there. And I think everybody that listens to them, they're fans.
This might be a biased opinion, but I think Kevin Kugler is the most talented person mm-hmm. in the broadcast journalism world right now. And I've obviously done a couple shows with Michael, and I'm not taking anything away from Michael because his body at work speaks for himself, but I totally agree with you on both of those guys. And we've got a great group of guys now. I mean, John Bishop is amazing at what he does. And I know a lot of people, specifically on the Red Sea Scrolls, I don't know why they don't like Josh Peterson, but I love Josh, and he's a fantastic human being on top of being a good broadcaster.
You got to have the antagonizer. You know, someone that kind of stirs the pot. And I think that's where Josh
his role well. You know what? I don't think he did originally. And uh-huh. people have to remember how young Josh was when he started. He started as a producer and worked, and the keyword there being worked his way mm-hmm. into that role on that show. He knows what strings he's pulling. Very good at his job. And then obviously Connor Happer just took over for that midday shift, and I think he's doing absolutely fantastic job. And I guess I could say that Gary and Damon are okay, but that might be underselling it by a mile. They're obviously they've been doing it together for such a long time. And
no, so we're pretty excited having you on our podcast, WTL, Where's the Line? And so we're always talking about sports betting lines, and we know you're a huge NFL fan.
It 49er helps that I'm a fan. Degenerate gambler as well.
There we go. See, perfect. You are perfect for the show. And something that's kind of fascinating to Gibran and I is how this, everything the NFL touches, it seems like,
turns to gold.
Gold, yes.
And it's
printing money.
Just amazing that the NBA had a couple elimination games on Thursday night, and the ratings were still dominated by NFL draft coverage.
Yeah.
And what preceded that was all this betting.
Tom Brady took over March Madness. Think about that. Yeah. I mean, guy coming out of retirement, granted he's the greatest quarterback of all time, but coming out of retirement stole the headlines from the largest betting event in America.
What he sent out like a 17-word tweet, and that was all there was in the sports cycle for like 24, 48 hours. Was he's back.
It's just America loves football. And I know the numbers have come out for the Super Bowl versus the World Cup or even WrestleMania to that degree, but the most popular country in the world's most popular sport just dominates the headlines. And I always, and I know we're comparing kind of apples to oranges here, but when you watch The Last Dance with Michael Jordan and when they went to Paris and all that, Michael Jordan was on the side of buildings in a country that he'd never even been to. It just kind of tells you how much the American pop culture dominates the headlines across the world. And the best quarterback of all time coming back for one more rodeo will definitely do that for you.
And to your point, Tom Brady dominates overseas markets as well.
Yeah, like absolutely.
The TB12
His wife
stuff,
doesn't hurt.
That helps.
She's got a little bit of a brand name. You know, she makes more money than he does?
Yeah.
That's incredible to me.
Like a lot more money.
Yeah, and he has 300-pound grown men falling on him for a living. So you know what I mean. Hats off to you, Giselle.
So I believe this kind of falls into it with NFL being so popular, right? But what's taken off is this player prop betting in the NFL draft. And you can, depending on what book you're in or what you follow, you can get as creative as you want to get or
Absolutely.
As wild parlays. And
we might need to change the frame of wording steal of the draft.
Yeah, there you go.
Because of where somebody might make a couple bucks on whoever they think is going where.
Well, it's something that, you know, Jabron and I, we're a relatively new show.
Sure.
So, and we come out once a week with a new episode. So we just try and really go after things that are going to be drawing the most attention.
You left out a key note there. We're a new show and we're killing it. Come on, man.
We are killing it.
You got to put yourself over. There you go. It's your show.
Hey, man. Yeah. If you're not going to promote yourself, no one else is.
There you go.
But we didn't really touch much on player props in the NFL draft. And I mean, that was something that would just, the more we watched it, the more we saw it develop. It just got bigger and bigger and got to this fever pitch. And then, okay, then Thursday and Friday happens, and okay, what's the fallout?
Right.
And, you know, some of the shows that we follow, like Wager Talk today, Teddy Covers talked about how on Friday morning, that was about the worst day the books had because all the sharp money.
When I'm Malik Willis, right?
Yeah, they killed it. All those player props killed it.
So there was the over-under set of 7 quarterbacks taken, and I took the over because I thought it would be 9, and it got to 8. And the funny thing about that is people talk about how the running back is a dying position in the NFL. There were 8 quarterbacks taken in the total draft. There were 6 running backs taken in, or 4 taken in the 6th round alone.
There you go.
You know, it's just one of those things that there's so much talk about this being a draft that'll go unappreciated because of the lack of quarterback development. Mm-hmm. When you look at the defensive and offensive line guys that were taken, I think Tyler Lindebaum, the center from Iowa, is going to be a Hall of Fame level center. I think he's that good. And we just talked about the steal of the draft and who I thought should have been the number 1 overall pick, and I'll talk about why I think he wasn't, but was Jordan Davis, the defensive tackle from Georgia. For my money, was the best player in college football year. And ESPN like kind of did a thing where they were talking about maybe why he fell to 13 to Philadelphia, and they showed some highlights, or lowlights, I guess we should call it, of him, quote-unquote, taking plays off. But if you look at what Kirby Smart's defense does, the plays that they were showing, and he has, and he's got limited snap reps and things like that, and I think that changes at the next level, but they were showing footage of him in cover 3 just eating up eating up the center as the nose tackle, and they marked that as like a negative. And you could tell it was by design. Anybody that knew what they were looking at knew that was by design to let the linebackers run free. Now, was that the best thing for Georgia to do this season? Maybe not, but I think Jordan Davis at 13 is a travesty.
Georgia had an all right season, though.
They did okay, yeah. And that's why Kirby Smart makes millions of dollars in Athens, Georgia, and I'm sitting here talking on this podcast.
That's a fascinating point, though, you made, talking about the running backs kind of being a dying position. No, it's not. And
never will be, by the way.
No, and you know, if I was a GM, put your GM hat on. I mean, you can't go wrong in those later rounds, you know, when you get 3rd, 4th on, taking a running back or a linebacker because they're so versatile and you can at least use them on special teams.
I don't mean to steal your show from you, but can I ask you a quick question?
Go for it.
Do you think whoever evaluates talent for the Jacksonville Jaguars actually watches football on Saturdays? Because I don't think there's any possibility.
Wow. Now, that's a great question. Maybe not American football.
Hey, shout out to Tony Khan. He's big into soccer and owns AEW wrestling too. But I didn't understand.
Yeah, there's so many things.
First three picks of the draft were just mind-blowing to me because, I mean, we just talked about load management with Jordan Davis and that being the reason he fell all the way down to 13, even though he was probably the best overall prospect in this draft. But Trayvon Walker had the same problems and it was outside. You know what I mean? And those guys are more likely to be a miss than inside guys. And then you talk about Aiden Hutchinson going number two to Detroit, and there might have been some internal pressure there to take the Michigan kid that's at the top.
I think there was.
How could there not be, right? Because, listen, jersey sales matter also.
Yes,
and I guarantee you he sells a ton. But when you watch the semifinal game between Georgia and, listen, they're the national champions, and there's some talent there. But Aiden Hutchinson got stonewalled by a true freshman tight end, and I think Brock Bowers is going to be special. But
yeah,
the number two overall pick in the NFL draft should be stonewalled by anybody, let alone a true freshman tight end.
And I get that, and that's, I think part of that is you don't want to just take one game and blow it out of proportion.
Agreed.
You know, I think there's a little bit of that.
See, but you can't do that if it's bad. But if it's good, like the national championship game, you end up being the number one overall pick because you can't convince me that Trayvon Walker had any game this season that would have other than the game against Alabama, the second one that put him at the top of that list.
Yeah, and I like taking big bodies. I think I would just be so scared not to take the best offensive or defensive lineman, you know, in the first round.
And it's
like I think I'd be so boring as a GM.
And it's crazy because I think if we're talking the top two, if you're talking the number one defensive lineman, no matter what position, the top offensive lineman, no matter what position, both of those guys, in my opinion, fell out of the top 12. Because, like I said, I think Jordan Davis was the best overall player on the defensive line. And then Tyler Lindebaum, and he's a center, though. And unfortunately, you can be the best offensive lineman in the country, but if you're only a center, you're only a center.
Yeah. And shout out to our in-state boy, Cam Jurgens, being the second center taken in the draft. I think he's going to do well as well. I mean, the Husker fan in me is like, man, couldn't you stayed one more year? But you got to understand, he's come over a couple of devastating injuries. And
Position change, never playing center again before he got to Nebraska, coming in as a tight end. And Scott Frost has had enough punchlines quotes that turned into jokes in his 4 years here. But him talking about Cam Jurgens maybe being the next great center at Nebraska came to fruition. Specifically, if you look at the big games that they played in, there was quite a bit of them.
Yeah.
He might have been the best player on both sides of the ball.
Think how bad he was early on. He had at least one high snap a game that ended up being just a devastating.
Snapping the football was a punchline in the state for 2 years.
God, it was just brutal.
Yeah.
But no, it showed that the coaching staff had a vision. They worked with this guy out of Beatrice. We actually televised that game where he really tore up his ACL.
It was horrible.
High school.
Yeah.
You just felt terrible for the guy, but it came out stronger and better on the other end. You know, that's some perseverance there. Blue collar mentality. But that, once again, I think that's a good pick if you're a GM, taking those strong, big, athletic dudes up front. Because I feel like there's too many misses at receiver, running back, quarterback.
And flip side of that, I said I hated the top three picks because Derek Stingley Jr., the corner out of LSU, who a lot of people thought was the number one overall player 2 years ago. I with injuries and everything else that's happened in his career, I really thought Sauce Gardner, the corner from Cincinnati, was the best corner in this draft. Didn't allow a touchdown in 3 seasons out there in Cincinnati. And granted, not playing the talent.
Yeah.
If you're not even covering anybody, not allowing a touchdown in 3 years, is the win getting a touchdown on it could happen. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And the fact that he had the numbers and was the best player on the number three team in the country, I think was the best corner. And he's one of those guys that's had a lot of chips on his shoulder and overcome a lot. And him not being the number one overall corner taken, I think, is only going to work out better for the Jets.
Probably. Now, talking about cornerbacks and those positions, this is where I think betting on the draft could work for you as far as like player props. But you got to take a big picture and do a lot of homework.
Sure.
Look at a number of teams. Let's say there's 5 teams that are thin at defensive back, and in the offseason they lost their top safety. So you know there's a finite number of teams that are going to be targeting defensive backs.
Or even a situation like Kansas City where Tyrann Mathieu hasn't signed a contract yet. You don't know if he's coming back to Kansas City or going elsewhere or something like
that. Exactly. So you know Kansas City might be looking for a defensive back. So let's say you get seven teams that are looking for defensive backs. You have six teams that have multiple picks in the first round. Odds are they're probably going to use one of those picks to get a defensive back.
Sure.
Okay, so if the over-under is at 4.5,
but this is where Vegas, hammer it. This is where Vegas makes their money, and they go quarterback on you, and then...
Oh, I know. I know it. But, I mean, that's for me, that's about as safe as you can get if you want to bet on the draft. But, you know, take us back to the bet you made.
Yeah.
Quarterbacks.
Right. So the over-under was 7. Total taken.
Total.
Which in any other season, I think, would have been laughable. Mm-hmm. But like you pointed out, I think a lot of people, some people thought Malik Willis was going to go in the first round. I didn't understand it. Not to take anything away from him, but the offense in which he plays in, I think, allows it, it's kind of back to the Timmy Changs and the Graham Harrells of the world that kind of got a little bit too much credit for the numbers they put up because they played PlayStation essentially. I thought Kenny Pickett was a first round talent. Hand size aside, nobody knocked Drew Brees for it, and it worked out well for the Saints. Ask New Orleans fans how they feel about it. I hated the Desmond Ridder pick. I think he got way too much credit for how good that defense was, because if you look at how many, I know Mel Kiper broke this down, but uncontested throws that he had that didn't even get, he didn't get touched, the ball didn't get touched, and just fell down to nobody with an open wide receiver is staggering for somebody that made it to a semifinal in the college football playoff. But Atlanta needed a quarterback, and I think we're having a completely different conversation about the 1-2 pick in this draft if Matt Corral sets out the bowl game and doesn't get injured.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, because I think he was maybe the best overall quarterback from a drop back standpoint.
Just drop back, deliver the ball from the pocket. I do agree with you on Kenny Pickett, and I was kind of shocked that he lasted till the 20th overall, just because the trend in the NFL is you get like this pass if you want to reach for a quarterback, because you got to get a trigger man. You got to get that quarterback. So
And how cool is it that he gets to go to Pittsburgh?
Yeah,
he stays in Pittsburgh. That's awesome.
Yep. And he's going to compete. Like, I know they got Trubisky.
I'm
a Chicago Bears fan, so
I'm not willing to say he's not going to start.
I know.
You know what I mean? It's
they drafted him to be the starter, right?
You don't take the number 20 overall pick quarterback if you're not planning on him seeing some time, let alone starting the season.
Yep, and I've heard that speculation too, where maybe they just start slow with like a package and bring him in. But I kind of like Scott Frost's analogy on that, or what he likes to say is if you have two quarterbacks, you have none.
Zero. Yeah.
You know, absolutely. So I think you either go with the kid or you let Trubisky start 4 or 5 games and see how it goes.
And just to stick on quarterbacks for a second, and we were talking a little bit about Iowa State before we started rolling. There was a lot of people that thought Brock Purdy at one point was going to be a first round guy.
Right.
Falls all the way to the last pick in the draft to my San Francisco 49ers. But there's like, it's when you talk about Sam Howell, Brock Purdy, Matt Corral, those guys that were before the season started, people were talking about Heisman finalists
and
possible number one overall picks.
Yep.
But to fall all the way out of it, not a huge Sam Howell guy. I mean, good luck to Washington taking him in the fifth. But I think
that the Commanders.
if Matt Corral can come back healthy, I think he's an NFL guy. I think Kenny Pickett's an NFL guy. And who knows what's going to happen with Trey Lance, and obviously Jimmy Garoppolo surprisingly somehow is still in San Francisco. But I think Brock Purdy might be just right there in the mix a couple years down the road.
Yeah, big arm guy, right? He's got a lot of starts under his belt. He's kind of what you're looking for. And to your point, it kind of speaks to how fickle it really can be, where Purdy was looking like a Heisman, you know, that was good money on him.
Brocktober was a thing.
Yeah. And then it all just goes away after a bad game and a couple losses. And then you're reduced to Mr. Irrelevant in the draft. And that's my big thing with a lot of these guys leaving a year early, or what you might think is a year early in that first round.
Sell your stock high. Yeah.
I mean, the difference, especially in the NBA with those lotto picks, the difference between a first round guy and a second round, third round guy is such a huge difference in what the league can do to kind of dictate the type of money you can make, especially over your first 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
That's where I'm looking at
it. And when we're talking about loves and hates of the draft, and just Brian Asamoah, the inside linebacker from Oklahoma, I mean, we haven't talked a lot of non-skill position guys, but I think he went to Minnesota in the third round with the number 66 overall pick. I think that's a guy that you can build your defense around long term.
Not just plug and play. Not just plug and play.
And
just
you got
right now
steal out of him in the third round. And the weird part about that happening is that usually happens because of how quarterback heavy the first round ends up going.
Yeah.
And this is the first time in recent memory that I can remember that a quarterback came off the board and the next there wasn't one within the next two or three picks. So
yeah, you see that trend happen too. Like as soon as that first guy goes, man, it's wild.
Now it happened with corners, cornerbacks in the first round this year.
That's my defensive back over under right there.
And I kind of want, as a guy that grew up loving the recruiting aspect and worked for a couple of recruiting sites, I've seen the trend go from the number one overall player in the country to be the Southern California quarterback to a defensive lineman. And just talking about whether it be Rivals or whoever, 24/7's national rankings. Is there seems to be more of an understanding that games are won in the trenches nowadays.
Yes.
And I think we're starting to see that motion over the NFL draft.
Yeah, well, and look what Clemson did. There was a time where, what was that, the Gator Bowl, where it was Bo Planey versus Dabo Sweeney, a couple of young coaches squaring off. And
I had a free ticket to that game and I didn't go.
Oh, man.
I thought they were going to get blown out and I was wrong.
Yeah, you were big time wrong on that. Yeah. I mean, that was...
I thought Quentin Castile was going to be something special after that, and I can't believe that it didn't work out for him. But, I mean, obviously there was other things at play there.
But just think of how the trajectory of those two guys, those two coaches, went after that game.
1,000%.
My point was, after the point I was trying to get to was, after that game, Dabo Sweeney doubled down on defensive linemen. Mm-hmm. And it was nothing but big fella.
Doesn't hurt he's in South Carolina, though, either.
That does help. That does help. But to get them over the top, to get out of the Gator Bowl realm and into the BCS and into the Final Four or whatever it's called now, the playoff.
National semifinal.
There we go. Yeah. And it rotates the name with the Bulls.
It'll change tomorrow. Somebody's going to listen to this in 6 years and be like, what's this idiot talking about?
What is that? The 4-team playoff. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah, we know.
But I mean, that's an interesting point you just made there, because if you look at both of those guys and look at what they did on the defensive line going forward and the talent that they had that position specifically,
mm-hmm.
went polar opposites as well. And it's still amazing to me to this day that they weren't able, they being the Coach Planey and his staff, weren't able to walk into a living room with a picture, a 9 by 10 of Ndamukong Suh and go, we can make you this. Yeah. And didn't have guys chomping at the bit to get to Lincoln.
He was
even Jared Crick.
And Jared Crick and Steinkuller was there. He had a decent season. But that should have been
I'm still mad they moved him to that side of the ball, so I don't want to talk about it. I don't understand how you take the number 7 overall player in the country who's rated as an offensive lineman and move him. And it might have been Baker's decision. I don't know. But
I was talking about Ty.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. But he played alongside, and that's really where he blossomed, where pressure was taken off of him because everything was on Sue.
Yeah.
But that should have been a recruiting tool. I mean, he was a Heisman finalist. And I still contend to, if he would have blocked that field goal against Texas in the Big 12 championship, he would have won the Heisman.
Well, there would have been Nebraskans outside of New York City Music Hall to burn it down.
Yeah,
if he wouldn't have. But no, I absolutely agree with that too. I mean, the guy single-handedly won that game.
Yeah, it is mind-boggling how there wasn't just a ton of momentum. There was momentum, but how didn't Nebraska capitalize on it and get those defensive linemen? I mean, we sent a guy, Bo Planey and his staff, took his sophomore year, what do you have, like 40 tackles or something like that. And not a stellar year.
I think he only played in 6 games.
Yeah. And then it just went to straight up superstar status and Heisman finalist his senior year to, top 5 pick in the NFL. It was just amazing what that coaching staff was able to do with that individual. And you thought,
well, and on top of that, this Prince of Mukamara,
DeJon
Gomes, and just some of the talent, Will Compton, guys that they put into the league that have long-lasting careers.
Compton was a captain for a number of years.
On 2 different teams.
Yeah.
And his podcast is fantastic. Bussin' with the Boys is great. But it's just one of those things that, and I hate to put it this way, but it's just kind of, as soon as the Callahan-level recruits left that program, you kind of seen a dip. And somebody once said that every coach needs to have every tool in their toolbox. And that's true. But if you have them all there and you only use the hammer, you tend to see a dip in recruiting. And I can't help but wonder if Bo Pelini's personality, or even, and I'll one up on that, who he was portrayed to be on TV, probably put a damper on a couple of recruits, because perception's reality.
It is.
And when you're known as the guy that screams at referees and pounds on your quarterback's chest, I don't think there's going to be guys that line up at the door waiting to play for you.
Swinging,
and I could be wrong. I'm not an 18-year-old kid, but
swinging your hat and almost hitting a referee. Like, yeah. I mean, it just got to be. And then I personally got frustrated with the whole cat thing because our coach was reduced to a cat meme. Like that rubbed me the wrong way.
And then he played up to it. Which, and there could have been pressure from the locker room, and it might have been a thing with him and his players. But no, I know a lot of people that feel that same way.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, what could have been, but you're exactly right.
There's somebody sitting in a room right now saying, well, I'll take the cat memes and go 9-3 these days. But you know, hey, and you may be right. Yeah, you may be right.
Hey, me too. I'm not saying that. I would like 9 wins again. Don't get me wrong. But you made a great point there. The recruiting that Bill Callahan brought, and he had like a number 5 team in the nation, like year 2,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but Harrison Beck was a part of that.
I mean, it was still a top 5 ranking, which was something Nebraska hadn't even sniffed, you know, for years and years and years. But he couldn't get the most out of his players, and Bo could. Mm-hmm. So there's your use all your tools.
So you said something interesting there, because think about where this program was when Bill. I'm not here to be a Bill Callahan apologist. I'm just saying how I saw it.
Uh-huh.
Look at what this program was when he took it over, who he had to work for. And when you think about it, the reason, to the bare bones of it, the reason Bill Callahan got fired is because he didn't want to fire his best friend. And he told a kid if he came here from Arizona State, he was going to get the starting job. Mm-hmm. Just think about this.
Yep.
If Bo Pelini's still calling that defense with Bill Callahan's here, with that talent that's able to come in, you already saw what it looked like.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you don't have the years with Zach Lee and Kevin Cosgrove isn't here.
Mm-hmm.
You probably have Joe. Right. You probably have Joe Gans as your starter. You probably have Joe Gans as your starter day one.
Yep.
And the things that could have been different.
Right.
And I don't think there's anybody in the world that will argue that Bill Callahan's a bad football coach. He's been in the NFL for a number of years for a reason. He was able to win in Nebraska. As soon as he was able to get his guy in here, when Zach Taylor came in here,
yeah,
and what they were able to do, and even look at the tail end of 2007 when Joe Gans took over.
You couldn't argue with scoring 42 points per game.
Yeah.
The rub was you're giving up 45, 46 points a game.
Yeah, you have to score more than the other team to win. I know maybe that's something that was lost on old Billy C. But
Billy C. I forgot about that.
I think there were things that could have been put in place that he could have been successful long term here. And what does that mean? He may not have been here after that, and maybe he's back in the NFL with another head coaching job, and it is what it is. But
no, I got a kick out. I mean, we're a couple of Husker guys. We kind of went down a little Husker road there. You know, we're talking recruiting.
We're supposed to talk the draft.
Yeah, that's all right, though. That's an organic. That's a good conversation there. Yeah. You know, most of our listeners are from around the area, and we always have a heavy Midwestern theme to it anyway. You know, you got to cover the Vikings, the Broncos, and the Chiefs, of course. Yeah. Was there one team that you feel really did well in this draft?
And I love what the Jets were able to do.
Gangrene, huh?
When you have needs and you address them, and I think you get steals in the first 3 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
when you look at Garrett Wilson, the wide receiver from Ohio State, maybe one of the fastest human beings to ever put on a pair of shoes, and then Breece Hall, the running back from Iowa State, and then maybe even the steal of the 3rd round with Max Mitchell, the offensive tackle out of Louisiana.
I'm never going to argue. These teams, like I've been hammering on.
And as a 49ers fan, I'm a big Robert Saleh guy, too, so I'm kind of hoping it works out for him out there in New York.
But. Yep, that's good. How about your 49ers? How'd they do? I mean, just you guys, you're 49er fans. You can't get away from you guys. My younger brother is a 49er fan, always was. You guys are everywhere.
Yeah, when your team's great, it's easy to be a fan of them. But, no, I don't know what this team is. And what I mean by that is Jimmy Garoppolo is still there. And I would have bet you, we're talking about betting, I would have bet you $1 million Jimmy Garoppolo and Baker Mayfield would have new residents and zip codes after this draft. And the fact that they're both there is confusing to me. I hated the Trey Lance pick. I completely 1,000% think that the pick was going to be Mac Jones, and the backlash from the fan base, which, by the way, I hope you're still feeling that way, San Francisco fans. they decided to go. Kyle Shanahan didn't even go to Trey Lance's pro day.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that pick was Trey Lance. And there was so much outrage because people thought that the wide receivers that Mac Jones made him who he was. Well, let's check with Bill Belichick in New England. And they'll tell you that's not the case.
Right.
But I think they're paying for that decision now. I don't think they know who they, and they're going to be fine because Kyle Shanahan is a genius, mm-hmm. and I firmly believe that.
They're going to win games. They're going to be competitive in the West.
But they're going to pay for that draft pick for years to come. And that's, we talk about the upside of the draft and guys being the future of their franchise, but that's the caveat to that is, okay, what about if you miss on a guy?
Yeah.
And more importantly, what if you sell off the next 2 years to miss on that guy? And as a Bears fan,
yeah.
you can relate to that with God, Mitch Trubisky. Yeah. And I know you asked me about this year, but with Trey Lance plays into this year, and when you go back and look at Trey Lance's highlight films, and he's underthrowing wide open wide receivers mm-hmm. at the Division II level,
yeah,
it's going to be hard, and he might be able to figure it out. And I think Kyle Shanahan's a guy that can get him there. I just don't think he's ready, and mm-hmm. Jimmy Garoppolo still being in San Francisco.
He's obviously not ready.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they would have pulled that trigger, they would have made that move.
If I'm going to tell you this right now. If Jimmy Garoppolo starts week one for San Francisco, and I hope he does,
mm-hmm.
Trey Lance will not be in San Francisco in 2 years.
They got to unload him. They got to get away from that.
Which, and I don't know who's going to want him. I mean, yeah. that's an indictment right there of who he is as a player. Yep. And if you put him out there, you're going to expose him. The trade value just goes down. So,
Okay. So you called me out. You exposed me as a Bears fan, which yeah. everyone knew that anyway. Let's go back to that draft where Mitchell Trubisky, right? And he was the talk of the town. Everyone was, oh, this guy from North Carolina winning all these games, bringing the Tar Heels up out of nowhere. I didn't like it. Okay.
Well, you do know why they drafted him though, right? Have you heard the story? Why the Bears thought that he was worth that pick?
Because he was a quarterback. I mean, why?
He kept his car from his. He still drove his that he had as a senior, yep. and they thought that was redeemable quality. Never mind the fact that his touchdown interception ratio.
Yeah. The fact that he's only started like 11 games or something.
Same with Trey Lance. I mean, he played two games his second season up there in
right?
North Dakota.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. But so Trubisky. Chicago actually moved up one spot. I think it was with San Francisco,
yes,
right?
Yes, correct. Yep.
So you guys got you made some equity there, dropped a spot, still got your guy,
yep.
and then got a second round and some more out of Chicago.
And somehow Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes were still sitting on the bench.
Oh, my God.
But man, how horrible would our franchises be with either one of those guys being
God.
In this position?
If
Deshaun Watson could stay out of jail, that's neither here nor
real
there.
Quick, even then, at that time, Andy Reid was catching flack for moving up eight spots to get
Mahomes.
So you don't know.
Yeah.
You really don't know. So this is where
right.
I'm a Chicago apologist, and I even called 1620 and let the guys have it.
402-951-1620. Yeah.
Because they were bashing the Bears, and you know, you have a Bears fan as a host, and I'm like, hey, you guys always talk about if you're going to reach – you're mm-hmm. going to reach on a quarterback, and you need to have a quarterback that's a quarterback-driven league. So if the Bears and their front office think that Trubisky's the guy...
Right, I agree
their
with that.
Jobs are on the line. They have more invested in that than you or I.
And again, back to what I said earlier, though, if you miss, your job is still in line, as we've seen,
right.
as everybody that's left Chicago from a GM and a coach. Oh,
everybody
standpoint.
Got fired from, you know, that was part of that.
And
is not there anymore.
Specifically because they missed on their quarterback. And
big time.
And we've seen situations like guys with like Ryan Tannehill, where it's a matter of their skill set being paired up with the right coach.
Right.
Quarterback coach combination.
Yep.
Maybe we're talking about Patrick Mahomes being a complete dud in the NFL if he doesn't have Andy Reid. And I don't think that's the case because I think he's too talented for that.
No,
but
that's a fair statement.
Yeah. You know. He didn't set the world on fire in Lubbock.
No.
He just didn't. And there's probably a reason for that. It's probably not him, as you've seen, because when you unlock his potential, mm-hmm. and listen, Andy Reid touches anybody, they turn into a Pro Bowler. But it's going to be really interesting to see how the dynamic around Patrick Mahomes' career changes. Once Andy Reid decides to hang it up, listen, Tyreek Hill's already gone.
Yep.
He's had Travis Kelce his entire career. He's had Tyreek Hill up until this point. How much different do we start looking at Patrick Mahomes when he doesn't have those resources around him? Because it's going to happen. It's not a matter of if. It's a matter of when.
Sure,
it
is. Oh, he signed that contract, and that's what always happens.
Yeah.
You know, when you
Unless,
sign those monster contracts.
And hopefully, I'll knock on wood for him. He doesn't have a career-ending injury or something like that. But
I tend to think that Mahomes will be fine just because of his talent.
I do, too. But he's set the league on fire so quickly, and rightfully so. I'm not saying he's not talented. I'm not taking anything away from him.
Well,
but people were starting to call him the Michael Jordan of the NFL.
Yeah, I hate that stuff.
And that's a lot.
Yeah,
but
is.
When you get off to that quick of a start and you mm-hmm. are successful, listen, he's been to four FC championship games.
Yeah.
And there's some – he only has one Super Bowl, Chiefs fans. But
Only one.
there's a couple franchises out there would kill for that. But, I mean, if – we'll see what it looks like with Tyreek in Miami this year. And,
yeah, yeah.
And obviously Travis Kelce only has a couple more seasons left in him, you think. I mean, the guy looks ageless, but
are you kind of taking a, if you start at the top, there's only one way to go type of perspective?
No, and I'm not even saying he's going to fail. I think it's going to be interesting to see how much we, because he's the face of the NFL right now, right? Mm-hmm. He's on every Hy-V commercial. He's everywhere. He eats ketchup on a steak. He's a horrible person. Anyway, right now, I think if you polled 32 out of 32 NFL GMs and said, if we're scrapping the league and we're starting from scratch and you have the first overall pick, who are you taking? I think every one of them would take Patrick Mahomes. I really do.
Yeah.
But how much different is that conversation with if he plays in New York or if he plays in Houston? Because and that's why I, despite his off-the-field issues, why I'm such a big fan of Deshaun Watson. Because the guy got sacked more than anybody else in the league and led the league in passing. Yep. So, it's like, oh, God, what could he have been?
Right.
If they would have traded up to get him in Kansas City. You know what I mean?
And oh, yeah.
It's just I wait to pass judgment on saying this guy's this and this guy's that until his surroundings change.
No, and I think
and that's even for the bet, because I think Zach Wilson's going to end up being very good, too.
Yeah.
And again, not because I'm a Robert Saleh guy, but I think if you can throw in Utah, you can throw in New York and in that environment. And when you go out and you've seen Buffalo draft EJ Manuel or John David Booty go into the Vikings, that never makes sense to me because you don't have a quarterback that is thrown in cold weather, bringing him into doing that 4 months out of the year and knowing there's been some warm weather quarterbacks that have been successful, but more often than not, it seems to be a fail.
Yeah, and you made a couple of great points there, and I really like the one where just think of what happens if, like, what if Patrick Mahomes goes to Cleveland?
Right.
I mean, that's just our Detroit for the longest time.
Yeah.
There's some
good luck, Jared Goff.
Yeah, there's been some really good quarterbacks that get drafted.
I mean, look what Matthew Stafford was able to do when he finally got a coach that in a team that could win.
And you think,
God, I hate saying that, by the way, because I hate the Rams. But
yeah, you got to give them their due. They put all their chips in the middle, and boy, did it pay off. With Detroit, like, they've had good pieces, but for whatever reasons, they just cannot put that puzzle together.
And that shows you that culture wins over talent every time. Mm-hmm. And
well, you need the talent. You need Matt Stafford.
Yeah, but I mean, the Lions had him and didn't do anything. They had Calvin Johnson and didn't do anything. It's not like they've had just a bunch of slouches up there. It just seems like there's a problem from the top down.
I think you're the best argument to be made, and I don't like to give him any more credit because everyone talks about him anyway, but the Patriots.
Yeah.
When you talk about culture, there it is right there.
Well, and there's like guys like Julian Edelman said that the Patriot way was actually the Tom Brady way. And it's hard to argue with that because the success he's had in Tampa.
Yep.
I'm still not sold that he's going to play there next year either, by the way.
Huh?
Because it's going to help that Bruce Arians is gone now, because there was clearly a disconnect there between those two guys,
there was something weird. Going on.
And maybe it was the Antonio Brown thing, and who knows? Because that was a Tom Brady decision. I don't care what anybody says.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little ironic that Bruce got sent to the front office 3 weeks after Tom came back.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, you're kind of reading between the lines there, and I don't think it's too difficult to see that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
1,000%.
It's easy to put that together.
I thought that Tom went to retirement because he was trying to get out of his contract.
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't want to play for Bruce Arians. And the coaching pick there was kind of interesting to me.
Right.
Because I thought it was going to be Byron Leftwich if Bruce Arians stepped down.
Yeah.
But it may be one of those things that they're going to try to let Byron break off after the season, do his own thing, but we'll see.
And Byron's still there.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's got a great relationship.
I just thought when Bruce Arians stepped down, that it would be the easiest transition. But I think Todd's a good coach, and we'll see what happens.
I do, too, and I'm glad he's getting another shot. And I think this sets Leftwich up to really take a good job.
And it might benefit.
He can be selective. He can be selective now.
It's very, very surprising to me that he didn't get the Jacksonville job, just because I thought that was an easy fit.
We already threw some shade at Jacksonville, rightfully so. And I think
it might be best for Byron Leftwich he didn't get that job too.
Exactly. Exactly. So and that's where I was getting at, is he can be selective now, and spending one more year with Tampa Bay and Tom Brady as his quarterback, I think only ups his stock. So he can actually move into,
it's not gonna hurt.
he's gonna be able to maybe move into a culture like we're talking about, where winning is going to be a little bit easier than it is in maybe some other spots.
And I really like Kyle Trask's a lot. Their backup down there, the Florida quarterback.
Yeah,
the play with Kyle Pitts and all that. Bruce Arians made a comment that he's ready to go into the season with Kyle Trask as his starting quarterback. And a lot of people scoffed at that. And he's clearly not Tom Brady. But I don't think he was blowing smoke there. I think that he's very talented, and I think they got a steal in that pick. And I expect him to be the starting quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as soon as Tom Brady actually hangs it up.
I mean, he was an SEC starter for multiple years.
Or go somewhere else.
Or go somewhere.
Dot, 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 dot.
Oh, please go to Chicago now. Yeah. We covered a ton of stuff there, Jimmy. Any other draft notes that you want to go over here?
I had some hits and misses. So I already said I really like Brian Asamoah, number 66, the Vikings. David Bell, the wide receiver from Purdue, going to Cleveland, playing with Deshaun Watson. I think that's going to be a match made in heaven.
Yep. Speed.
Matt Ariza, the San Diego State kicker, was taken in this draft in the sixth round. He's very much of the Pat McAfee school of kicking.
There we go.
And has the personality to go along with it. And obviously, I had Jordan Davis as the best pick in the draft.
I like that, Davis.
13. Yeah. And I went over my losses. I think the first top three picks just were very head-scratching. So often, we knock guys for bad performances. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, all three of these guys had some pretty horrible performances this year, and their games that they did well in were the only thing that it seemed like the GMs focused on. But hey, listen, we're talking about the Jags, the Lions, and the Texans here.
There's a reason. There's a reason, right? I also feel like when we get into that right after the college football playoffs, when then we get into that the draft talk, right? And then we're having these pro days. There's really only one way for a lot of these guys to go, and that's down, because you're gonna find out that their 40 isn't that fast,
right?
When
they're not wearing underwear and actual pads, they slow down. What a weird concept. I love the combine just because I'm a draft dork, but it's one of those things that's like, how much does this really matter? The fact that Wandale Robinson fell to the second round, probably had one of the best combines of all time.
Yeah.
Speaking of misses and Lincoln, I put very little stock into what happens in Indianapolis.
It feels like some front offices, for whatever reasons, put too much stock
all their
in
chips.
It. You know, it's like wild. It's wild. Did the kid win on Saturdays? You know, and I like what Parcells would do as far as taking a quarterback. He needed them to have 40 wins
right
in college before he even looked.
And
at
it's understandable. Speaking of which, the one if there's somebody I'm not willing to say is a hit or a miss, but it's going to be interesting. Bailey Zapp, the quarterback out of Western Kentucky that went to New England, set the record for passing in college football this year. I think he's going to be somebody interesting to watch under Belichick. And obviously Josh McDaniels is gone, but under that system, exactly how he panned. And you got to unseat Mac Jones, and a lot of people think that can be done. But
well, and Jones is a guy, he will get injured. And it's tough to play a complete season from wire to wire. So,
I mean, he literally saw his breath for the first time this year in a cold weather game over there. So how does that dynamic work? And it gets cold up there in the hills in Western Kentucky. So
it does. You know. It does. Looks like a good fit. And, can you believe it? Belichick might have did good in a draft.
Yeah, weird how that works out.
So, Jimmy, you are host and founder of After Hours. Where can people find that and tune in?
Yeah, we're on Tuesday through Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. on 1620 The Zone. Then we're there every Saturday morning from 8 to 10. The reason I say it that way is if we get bumped for Creighton basketball games or Royals baseball games and things of that nature. But we're always on Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. no matter what. And then you can always find our podcast at soundcloud.com/afterhours1620.
Excellent, Jimmy. Can't thank you enough for joining us on
fun,
WTL.
Man. Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
You bet. All righty, folks. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this. And welcome back, everybody, at WTL, Where's the Line? I'm your host, Andy Klassen, joined by...
Jabron's back here, boys.
Oh, boy. And now we're going to get into your wheelhouse here, Jabron. USFL.
Are you ready for some football? Hell yeah.
But real quick, how about that interview with Jimmy Allen? That was good stuff.
That was awesome. That's so good. He has so much knowledge about that stuff.
He does. Like, I wanted to just focus in on one or two things, but... Yeah, like you said, he's so knowledgeable and just has such a vast scope on things. You know, conversation would go here, there, and it was good stuff. I really enjoyed
it. Exactly. No, this guy can talk days and days about this kind of stuff and, you know, kind of just, you know, spin around your head because, you know, I'm usually thinking about one thing and making money and this betting stuff, and he has – everything and yeah. above that.
He was just pulling out NFL draft picks from 6 years ago.
Exactly.
You know, like it was yesterday. Or, yeah, exactly.
So good. No, that guy's awesome.
All right, so let's dive into, you know, your wheelhouse.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Everyone's wheelhouse, the USFL.
Yeah.
Kind of an up and down week, right? Last week. I mean, and we got to let's preference this with this is a new league, new players, new coaches, but you went 1-1-1.
Yeah.
Right? Nope. With what we said last week.
Yep. One of my teams covered, one of my teams pushed, and one of my teams lost. So I feel pretty good about it just because I did all straight bets on, you know, on those games or whatever. Uh-huh. So kind of came out, you know, even. Those breakers really broke my heart, though, because I really...
Nollins, what are you doing?
I really thought that they were the best team in the league, and that didn't happen for me, so...
They got beat up a little bit there.
The Stallions took them down.
All right, so let's start with the Friday
evening
game, 9 o'clock on FS1.
Yeah.
Philadelphia Stars, they're 1-2, taking on the Michigan Panthers, who are also 1-2.
Yep.
1-point favorite. Panthers, where are you going?
Panthers are actually 1-point dog, Andy. They're plus one. They're a 1-point dog.
You're right.
And I really, really think this Panthers team is about to hit its stride. They just blew out the Maulers 24-0.
This is insane. They're wow.
They're 1-point favorite. I don't get the line either. I think they're clearly the better team. The Michigan Panthers running back. Well, I could be, you know, a little Midwest. You know, I think this could be forming into my favorite team here, the Michigan Panthers, just because they're the closest team affiliated with the Midwest. But the Michigan Panthers running back, Stevie Scott, had 54 yards and a touchdown, and Reggie Corbin had 133 yards and a touchdown. They just kind of carried them to victory. The Maulers really didn't have a... have a chance against this running offense, and I think it continues, and I think the Panthers get their second win, and I get a free point, so
yeah. Okay.
I'm all about it.
Now, I don't know what book you're on, but okay, so I'm looking at Fox Bet right now. Okay, I'm looking at one of their books, and they actually have it as a pick 'em, and it's plus money with the Panthers, so it's plus 105.
Yeah.
So if you want to get, I mean, this should, that might be what you want to do right now.
Exactly.
If you haven't put it in, get it on that app, get that plus money at 105. That way you get your Panthers and your favorite, at least who start out as your favorite. Moneyline has the Stars at minus 133.
Right.
So if you want that plus money, you actually get the Panthers here. Spread-wise, both teams are at minus 110.
Exactly.
That over-under at 36.5. It's kind of where everybody's at right now.
Yeah, 36.5. It's
that's
so
right there. That
these,
is right
these
there.
Over-unders right now in the USFL are so crazy. I haven't been a very big keen on it right now, just because I got to figure out where these teams are, where the usual line is for these guys.
Yeah.
I still don't know if these are 40-point games or 28-point games.
Yeah.
I can't figure it out because they flip-flop so much. The Panthers scored 24 points last week, but the Maulers scored zero. So I don't really know what to do with a game like this, especially with the Philly Stars, you know, not putting up a lot of points either. So I would stay away from that 36.5. If anything, I would go the under.
Go under.
But I'm going to stay away from that and just take my free money with the Panthers. I think they're bringing it home for their second win of the year.
And depending on what book you get in, you might get that plus money.
Exactly.
You might get that plus money.
Hop on that plus money, guys.
There we
go. Hop it on her.
Love that. Love that. Okay,
yes, sir.
So let's go. Let's head on over to the Saturday afternoon game. That's going to be on NBC Peacock. That's our New Jersey Generals, kind of my favorite. That's the old Trumpsters there.
Yeah, the old Trumpsters. You're fired.
You're fired. Versus the Pitt Maulers, who are 0-3. Now, this is wild. This is 8.5.
This is the biggest spread that we've seen in the USFL.
Yeah.
For sure.
In any kind of football, this is a huge spread.
Yeah.
8.5. This is crazy.
So the reason it's like this, Andy, is because the New Jersey Generals just came off a kind of thrilling win last week, and the Maulers are 0-3. And they didn't score 1 point last week.
Yeah, that's tough.
Last week needing to spark New Jersey Generals head coach, Mike Riley, Cornhusker Mike Riley.
The mastermind.
Replaced Luis Perez with a dual-threat quarterback, DeAndre Johnson, in the second half. And the Texas Southern product made Riley look the smartest I've ever seen him.
Right. Yeah, it was a good move.
Helping New Jersey overcome a 10-point deficit in the second half for a 24-16 win over the Philadelphia Stars. I like New Jersey to cover in this game just because this DeAndre Johnson is one of the most athletic players that I've seen in this league, and I bet he's getting the start.
So once again, I'm going to take us to the book here with Foxbet.
Yeah.
They actually already have it at -9, New Jersey. and this money line is insane.
Yeah.
-667.
Yeah.
No value whatsoever.
No value.
On the other side, the Maulers are +425. To your point, you really don't know, but I do know Mike Riley, and I do know he makes questionable coaching moves.
So, not anymore. You know, he's past that. He's past that.
Okay.
Once the Huskers start paying him, he started becoming a good coach.
But for +425 money, maybe I'll take a chance, a flyer on Mike Riley putting in the ill-equipped quarterback.
the whole thing with the Maulers is, you know, obviously you like that plus money looking you in the face. The Maulers have only scored 26 points, Andy, in three games combined.
Right.
And most teams in this league should score 26 a game. Yeah, they've only scored 26 in three games.
Yeah.
Combined.
Yeah, they just do not have any offense. Like, Mike Riley could totally, blow it, but still come away with the victory.
Exactly.
And that's why, I mean, most of these games, you know, you're looking at the money line, -133, +105, whatever the case, you know, but this one is way out of whack with -667.
Yep.
So I agree with you. New Jersey's well out in front on this. The only question for me is, can they cover that 8.5 or 9?
Yeah.
You like them. You like
them
too.
I do like them. I just don't think that they're going to have any. This DeAndre Johnson is not only he can fling it about 70 yards, but he can run it for about that much as well. So this guy is probably the most exciting player that I've seen so far.
Okay.
In the USFL, and I just don't think that the Maulers will have anything to stop him.
Well, and they haven't in the first three games.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that. I like that as well. Generals to cover that 8.5. Get it at 8.5 if you can. It's already moved to 9.
If
on
you
some
see
books.
Anything with an 8, get on it, because I would almost, you know, put anything on them getting this 8.5. Not, you know, 10's that gray area for me, Andy.
Right, right. And that's even more gray, you could say, in the USFL, since we have not only two-point conversions, but three-point conversions.
And onside kicks / fourth and 12s. And,
it's entertaining, man. It's entertaining football. And, you know, the NBA hates it because they're trying to cash in on their playoffs right now.
Yeah.
But I'm watching football.
Everybody wants to watch football. What the heck, man?
So. All right. So let's get into our weekend capper. And that is the Houston Gamblers. We got to talk gamblers.
Gambling.
Versus the Nolens Breakers, who are at 2-1, -4 over the Gamblers. What do you make of this?
Like I said at the start of the segment, the Birmingham Stallions rallied behind its defense in a 22-13 victory over the previously unbeaten New Orleans Breakers, which really broke the bank for me this weekend. But they registered 4 sacks, an interception, and a turnover on downs. I like the Breakers to bounce back here, Andy. The Gamblers' defense isn't as strong as the Stallions, and I just think the Breakers break through again.
Breakers break through.
And I think they win by a touchdown easily.
You think so? So, yeah. I mean, once again, the book I'm looking at has the Breakers already at -4.5.
Yep.
So they already got that. They've squeezed in that half point. But you're saying, regardless, take them because they're going to win by 7 or more.
I think it's 7 or more. I still think they might be the best team in the league. Just that Stallions defense really came after them last week with that pass rush. And I don't think that they were ready for it. I think they're going to kind of get back in there, figure out the holes, and kind of in this Houston Gamblers team isn't the Birmingham Stallions. These guys are 1-2, and the Breakers are still 2-1. And I think
they want to get back.
I think this line is going to spread all the way probably to 6 points by Sunday. So
it's already moving.
Yeah. So if you guys can get it at 4, get it at 4.
Now, what about that over under? It's at 41.5.
Yeah.
You know, -110 across there. I kind of like that. I think that's a solid spot on 41.5. Yeah. I think this is going to be a close game. I could even agree with you on New Orleans bouncing back here. Yeah. I do like the Gamblers offense. It's fun.
Yeah.
They will gamble.
Yeah, they'll gamble. you have to in this league. No, I kind of like that over, Andy. I do, because Houston can put up points, and we've seen that, you know, obviously New Orleans can as well. So I could see this being a, you know, 21-31 kind of game, you know,
yeah,
21-35 kind of game, or
that's what this 28 is geared to 35. For too. The USFL, I feel, is geared for shootouts.
It's supposed to be.
The Maulers are kind of breaking it here by not being
not
able to score
points.
And that really does show you that there is a limited number of good quarterbacks on planet Earth. That is all that's showing you.
Well,
and
the receivers, NFL shows you that, Andy. Yeah.
There's not 32 of them.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
There's like 25. And then it gets really bad.
It gets really bad after that. So, no, I agree with you. I kind of do like that over. But my safe pick of the week is definitely that 4 points with the Breakers is what I'm locking in on this game.
The Breakers, bank on it.
Yes, sir.
So that's your USFL break down from us here at WTL. What are we coming back with here to finish this out?
We got UFC 274. We got Cowboy Cerrone. We got Justin Gaethje. We got Charles Oliveira. We got Rose. We got them all.
God.
This is such a huge card. Biggest card to date of the year. And there's going to be fireworks.
All right, so you heard it, folks. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more WTL Talking UFC. And welcome back, everybody, to WTL. I'm your host, Andy Klassen, joined by
Gibran, the Power Lay Pounder. I'm back. UFC 274. Let's go.
Here we go. We always finish strong every time out, and you know we're giving it to you once again.
For sure.
This is right. This really is your wheelhouse here, the UFC.
Yeah.
And this is a dandy here, 274. This is a loaded card.
I
don't even know how we're going to fit it all into this segment here.
Right.
So let's dive right into it. Yep. I mean, this is a fan favorite right here.
Yeah.
Donald Cerrone. Cowboy. Joe Lauzon.
Yeah, Lauzon.
Lauzon.
Joe Lauzon.
Okay,
back.
Lauzon. All right. Yeah. And, of course, Cowboy's a huge favorite here. And, I mean, just looking at the card, of course he is. I mean, he weighs about 20 more pounds. He's 6'1 compared to 5'10. How does Lauzon even have a chance in this, and what is going on?
Well, the whole thing is that these guys are two of the biggest UFC, vets that you could ever have.
Like a legacy. This is a kind of a legacy fight. Okay.
Yeah, Cerrone has over 50 fights. Lauzon has over 40 in the UFC. It's absolutely nuts.
And these two, for all those fights, they stretch them out. Average fight time, 9 minutes and 44 seconds for Cerrone. Lauzon, 7 minutes, 53 seconds. So, like, I mean, they're gonna give the fans what they want to see here.
Yeah. Cerrone is one of the oldest fights at, 39, while Lauzon is a veteran at 37. Both of these guys have been around the block, like we've been saying, heading towards the back end of their careers or the very end of their careers.
Mm-hmm.
But we should have a great fight on Saturday. It should be really, really awesome. Cowboy is one of the most respected fighters in UFC history, we've alluded to.
Yep.
On the flip side, Lauzon took a step away from UFC nearly 3 years, but is still a very capable fighter. And,
Oh, yeah, he's in shape. Don't get that twisted.
I'm going back on Cowboy now. The fight, I just believe he's the better fighter. Like, with all the things that you were alluding to, I just think he's a bigger, better fighter. I'm willing to drink some juice on this one, so to speak, and, take the, kind of lopsided figure that you're talking about. I locked it in at minus 175, which would mean that I would have to risk $175 to win 100.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a very good bet for me. But if you don't want to risk that much, I would throw this minus 175 into a parlay with a couple more picks that I'm going to give up here in a little bit.
Well, and to back what you're saying, when the odds get that out of whack, and you have to risk that much to win 100, you better be pretty confident. But not only does he have the reach, the height,
all those things. I'm looking at some of these stats here and like significant strikes.
Yeah.
Landed per minute. We yeah. got Cerrone here at 4.43. Lauzon's only at 2.84.
Exactly.
That's a huge discrepancy.
It is.
You know, it's 46% compared to 39%. Absorbed. The complete flip of the script here.
Yeah.
Donald's only taking 4.49. Joe is at 5.39. That's just insane.
So yeah.
You take two opposite side stats,
yeah.
and they both favor Cowboy.
They do.
So, come on.
And we got
come on.
And, you know, I think a lot of people are probably a little scared of this pick just because the last couple times we've seen Cowboy, he's been up against some of the best fighters in UFC
history.
Dude,
he's just taking that paper. He's making that paper.
We got to remember that Joe Lauzon is not Conor McGregor. He's not Khabib Nurmagomedov. He's Joe Lauzon, 37-year-old guy.
Yeah.
I really think Cowboy gets this done fairly easy. So, like I said, throw that 175 on it or throw it in a parlay. I like both of them, so that's the way I'm going with it.
And I'm not going to argue with you whatsoever. And I also – I like the show that Cowboy always puts on.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that is fun. It's just fun.
He's one of the best. He's an entertainer.
And Lauzon gets it, too.
So yeah.
He's going to entertain. Like I said, they both like to stretch out their fights. It's going to be great entertainment. I just think Cowboy has a little too much.
Yeah.
So I'm going to – I hate taking the odds like that. You know, I hate risking that much.
Yep.
But I think you almost have to on this.
Exactly.
And maybe if you want to cover yourself, hedge it a little bit, maybe get into a parlay, go ahead and do that.
Yeah, for sure.
But, man, I am looking at Cowboy taking this one down.
Yep. No doubt about it, guys. And that's the first fight of the card, Andy.
Yeah, I know.
First fight of the card. So this card is going to be bought by so many people around the world just because, well, first of all, these are two of the best fighters of all time in UFC history. And then we got two title fights we're not even talking about.
Yeah, yet. Two title fights are coming up here. I mean, we're talking about two all-time greats to start the night. And then we got two titles. And then, okay, let's get into the next thing we want to talk about. This is too much fun.
Yeah.
A couple of women.
Yeah.
Thug.
Rose. Nunez.
Versus Cookie Monster.
Yeah, Carla Esparza, Cookie Monster.
Okay, now Rose, Thug.
Yeah.
She has a record of 12-4 versus Carla at 19-6. So a couple really good overall records, both coming off of a win.
Yeah.
Both United States from the U.S.
Yep.
5-5 versus 5-1, 115, 116, reached 65, 63. Like, across the board, these two kind of mirror one another. So I'm thinking this is going to be a pretty tight one.
Well, that's where I differ from. The difference between Esparza's last win and Rose's last win, Rose has defended her title twice in a row. She is the champion for a reason.
Yeah, she's got the belt.
She has the belt.
It's bigger than her. Like, she weighs 115 pounds. The belt looks like it weighs about... Yeah, 115.
Well, one thing that I do want to bring up here, Andy, is that these two fought for the inaugural UFC strawweight title back in 2014, where Cookie Monster, Esparza, won by submission to become the champ.
Okay.
Now, 8 years later, the two are set to rematch, Nunez being the champ and being on an absolute steamroll. She is just running over people at this point.
Okay.
Rose has been the queen of rematches since April 2017. She only has fought Zhang, Andre and Jedrowski in second fights, and she's 3-0 in these rematches.
Smashing.
So anybody that she gets a second look at, she is going to kill them. So this is an intriguing matchup for Cookie Monster. She's a great wrestler.
She's number two.
She's a great wrestler.
Yeah, I mean, she's not the number one defender, but she's right
there.
Yeah.
No, it's because Nunez has already beat number two twice.
Number one contender.
Exactly. No, but Carla is, you know, one of the greatest wrestlers probably in strawweight history.
Mm-hmm.
But Nunez is so much better at wrestling now. That's the reason she lost back in 2014 is that her skills weren't that toned in yet.
Her grappling stats still aren't that good.
No, they're not.
No.
But she's not letting people take her to the ground is the whole thing. She's so much better at staying on her feet now and not getting into those situations. I expect her to be able to keep standing and, you know, just kind of piece up Carla on the feet. Rose is just the much better striker, and she'll land shots to win win this in a clear cut decision.
Just
to
look at her
defender.
Look at her makeup. She looks like a striker. One thing, you know, and I'm just going up and down the stats card here.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about grappling. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Rose is still at only a 1.7 per 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Where we have Carla the Cookie Monster at 3.53.
Yeah.
So she that's her bread
and
butter.
That's her game.
She wants to get you down, and then you flip it on the. But this is where. The contrast comes in for me. The submission is Thug at 0.69 per 15 minutes. Carla only has a 0.34, so she can get you down, but she can't capitalize.
Exactly.
And with the limited times that Rose gets you in a hold, she makes it happen.
Yeah,
she
no doubt
ends
about it. And she doesn't want to do that. Thug is going to come out and try and knock this girl out.
Yeah, she's throwing fisticuffs.
Which I really think is going to happen. My pick for this one, well, we haven't even talked about the line yet because it's so much fun to talk about this fight, is Rose is a pretty big favorite here at a minus 195 on most books.
Woo.
So even a more lopsided favorite than Cowboy. Mm-hmm. But I just think this one is another easy pick for you, and that's why I'm saying is to make your value here is – to lump these two together, put Cowboy and Rose in the same parlay, and that will even your odds a little bit. They're both going to hit, guys. They're both going to hit.
They're both going to hit. If parlays are tough.
They are.
You know, we joke around
it's
about
it. It's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, and you're the parlay pounder, so you'll get it in. But that is a very tough bet. So, like, I don't want to go off on a tangent here and be telling people to just rock parlays all the time.
No.
You know that might be your namesake, but that is a difficult bet.
It's tough.
But here, with all this plus money on one side in such a egregious, if you will, fashion, this is your almost picture-perfect spot for a type of parlay to get some value. I want to mention something here. I'm looking at UFC.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I feel like this might be a little gender bias here.
Yeah.
Okay. So they showed Cowboy, you know, and Lorzen, and they showed their ages, 39, 37. Rose and Carla, they're not showing their ages here. Like, they're giving me their height and their weight. But come on, ladies.
You don't need to know the age.
I just think that's ridiculous.
No, that's pretty wild. I've never noticed that before on there.
That's so stupid. That, like, give me a break.
Yeah.
But okay.
It wouldn't be too hard to find. But yeah, no, that is pretty wild.
So stupid.
And
so
what
stupid.
I'm going to say, Andy, if you're really scared about that parlay with Rose, I would. There's going to be another bet that's coming out here probably in the next couple of days by her winning by knockout, which I think is going to happen, and mm-hmm. that's probably going to be a lot better odds for everybody. So if that's what you guys want to jump on instead of parlaying it with Cowboy, that's probably going to be probably at a
minus
100 or even a plus money bet with her knocking her out, which I think is going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it feels that way. It looks that way. That's the way the trends are going here.
Yep.
Rose has just been on a straight-up tear.
Her striking has been unbelievable, taking down some of the best women I've ever seen, and she's not done yet.
Knocking them out left and right, and here we go with Carla stepping in. And, okay.
And Rose is looking for a little bit of revenge as well, which never sits right with Thug.
Thug. Oh, man, these nicknames, I love them.
They're the best.
So let's get to a couple more nicknames here, and the matchup of the night.
Yes.
The highlight.
Justin Gaethje.
Gaethje.
The highlight.
Come on now.
Yep.
Oliveira.
Versus Charles DuBronx. Oliveira.
DuBronx. Now, they're both coming off wins as well.
No doubt about
it. This is a couple impressive records here.
You're telling me.
You know, highlight, Justin sitting at 24-3. Charles sitting at 32-8. And both coming off wins. The Brazilian sitting at 5'10". Guy from the U.S., Justin, sitting at 5'11". Both at 155. I mean, on paper, this looks like a pretty even matchup. However, Oliveira has the belt.
Yeah. I mean, just look at the people that these guys have fought.
Mm.
Oliveira is on a streak like I've never seen. He beat Tony Ferguson in 2020. He beat Michael Chandler in 2021, and he just beat Dustin Poirier. It's so crazy. I've never seen a run. You know, people get on runs like this, obviously, every once in a while.
It's tough in the UFC.
But it's so tough in the UFC. USD, especially for guys that the names I just said are some of the best fighters of all time. And like I said, Michael Chandler, Justin Gaethje just beat him as well, but he's literally one of the best fighters, you know, ever. And Gaethje, his last loss was to Khabib Nurmagomedov, which is literally the GOAT of the sport. So these guys don't lose a lot, and it's
I like the contrast of these two guys.
It's a pay-per-view.
Yeah, it is. I like the contrast here because 83% of the time, Gaethje is winning by knockout.
Yes.
Okay, flip that to the other side. Only 28% of the time does Oliveira do that. But he does win by submission 63% of the time compared to 4% from Gaethje.
Yeah, no.
You know, so it's a complete contrast of fight styles here.
Gaethje's one of these guys where the name, the highlight, it really goes with him because that's all he's out there to do.
Yeah.
He's out there for a highlight. He's going to knock you out. Yep. What I really think this fight comes down to, Andy, is if Gaethje can get the KO in the first two rounds. Because
if he can't,
the longer this fight goes, the better Charles Oliveira will go. Oliveira has been a bit slow starter in his two title defenses against Chandler and Poirier. Both rocked him and dropped him. Both nearly finishing him, but he kept going, and he was able to recover and found the KO shot against Chandler and took Poirier's back and submitted him. So if Gaethje, however, has a solid chin, so...
Yeah, look at that guy's chin.
Yeah.
Dude. And his average fight time's 10 minutes and 19 seconds. Like, he's not going down either.
He's not, but...
Yeah, that's over 3 minutes longer than Oliveira.
Exactly.
And I get it. It's getting cut short because he's submitting guys.
Yeah.
Like, I get that. But I'm just saying... I mean, if you want to get into a marathon and you want a guy to slip, that's risky business, especially with a guy that's throwing fists.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. The reason I said that, Andy, is because the more and more Gaethje gets tired and not throwing, you know,
per-served
haymakers, Oliveira's going to open up and trying to take him down. And if this gets on the ground at all, Charles definitely has the upper hand on him. Obviously.
Yeah, he does. He does.
You saw this with Gaethje against Khabib. That's the only way that he's probably going to lose that fight is, you know, but Khabib submits everyone. But we've seen that the highlight can get into trouble when he gets on the ground.
Sure.
From the opening bell, Gaethje will need to, you know, get right in Oliveira's face, and I do think he will. He's going to be pressuring him with leg kicks, you know, and you know, real big haymakers. Once he starts landing those shots, Gaethje's power will show, as he will probably drop Oliveira, I think, in the first two rounds and get a stoppage. His wrestling is also good enough to keep him in this fight, like you're saying.
Here's a crazy stat I want to share with
you. Yeah.
Absorbed significant strikes per minute.
Yeah.
Gaethje's at 7.81.
Yeah.
Oliveira's at 3.13.
Yeah, yeah.
That's talking about the jaw, you're saying.
Yes.
So Justin can,
chin.
He can take it. And I don't know if Oliveira, that's not even his game. That's not his strong suit.
No.
Is delivering those blows. So, that, like, both those things.
He can do it, but yeah.
They play into the highlight. Yep. They play into what the highlight wants to do. He wants to trade fists. And if he can get Charles Oliveira to do that, I think it gives him a great, great advantage and a chance, even if he doesn't finish it in the first two rounds, to catch him, him in the fourth or fifth.
That could definitely happen, Andy. Let's talk about the line a little bit here, because I think this is a little out of whack here.
Okay.
I jumped on Justin Gaethje, the highlight, at plus 135 yesterday, and that's plus money for me, so I'm hopping on it. I really think that this is going to happen by knockout for the highlight. I think he is taking the belt from
DuBronx.
You know, taking it back to wherever Gaethje is. I think it's Colorado. So...
somewhere in the U.S.
I think he's going to become the new champ, and I really think this plus money here is where to throw some you know, stacks on, guys.
Well, there's your value. You actually get the plus money, and you get the number one contender.
Yeah.
And you alluded to it earlier, DuBronx, Oliveira is on a run here that it almost feels unsustainable.
It does.
You know, in the UFC, it's just so tough to stay on top. It's almost one of their downfalls as a company. you know what I mean? Because you can't build those dynasties. You can't build. There's no such thing as the 29 Yankees.
Yeah, no. Yeah, this isn't a murderer's row type of situation. No, I get what you're saying. It's you know, these fighters get on a roll or whatever, and then it's done before you know it. Mm-hmm. Look at Ronda. Everybody thought that she was just going to keep on going forever and ever, and then bigger, badder chicks show up.
Oh, man.
It happens.
And did
it
they?
It happens.
Wow.
I think this is Gaethje's time. I think it's his turn to take on the belt. Oliveira has almost got knocked out in the last two fights, and I really think that Gaethje is a better fighter than both of those guys. So I really think he's going to end this one, and he might end it early.
His strikes carries a little bit more weight
than
what Oliveira might have taken on the chin last couple of times.
For sure.
Are you sneaking anything in there, like a decision by the second, decision by the third, because you know Gaethje's going to be coming out swinging?
Yeah. I mean, if I was going to jump on anything in Indy, it would be exactly what I'm going to pick for Rose, is just overall KO for Gaethje, which is going to be even more plus money. It's probably going to be in the plus 250 range, plus 300. So that's going to be some good value there. But like you said, that's scary stuff when you're you know, doing a decision, because you don't really – he could go all five rounds and just beat him up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it could be a submittal. So it's,
I mean, if Gaethje gets in some really good strikes in round two, three, you know, he might just want to dance
back
around
off
and
back win the
off.
Belt.
Yeah.
He's not usually that kind of fighter. He is the highlight. So I think he's going for the highlight knockout, and I think he'll get it.
Living up to his name.
Yep.
All right. I love it. Well, I think that's going to do it for WTL, right, man?
Yeah, we went over it for the UFC. Woo! This is going to be such a good card. Everybody tune in. It's going to be so much fun.
And don't forget, folks, we are all over Twitter, YouTube, TikTok for daily picks. Jabron, you are hammering TikTok.
If you guys forget these picks by the time that these roll around, all you have to do is check my Twitter, check our Twitter, check the TikTok. We got these picks out, guys. All you have to do is line them up.
No doubt about it, and we gotta mention today's broadcast was Cinco de Mayo, right?
Cinco de Mayo.
Right? Nebraska Brewing Company, Taco Vesa, their Mexican-style lager. It's a crystal clear, crisp, absolutely refreshing drink, and I can attest to that because I've enjoyed a couple of them during our broadcast here.
Well, let me see.
There we go.
Oh no, that is good, Andy. I love them.
That is
I've
for
had
real.
A few. That's kind of a joke.
That's for real, and that's in time. I love it. All right, folks. Thanks for listening. My name's Andy Klassen, joined by Jabron the Parlay Pounder.
Yes,
as
sir.
Always, this was WTL.
Nebraska Public Media Sports brings you live all-day coverage of the NSAA High School Football Championships on Monday, November 24th and Tuesday, November 25th. Watch all day, both days, on Nebraska Public Media or live stream every game on Nebraska Public Media's YouTube channel.